You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
War is continuation of politics by other means, so wrote Clausewitz a very long time ago. And when war halts, well, presumably politics resumes, of course taking into account the outcome of the preceding war. Israel invaded and massively destroyed Lebanon this past summer, but it did not win its war. In fact, it suffered both political and military defeats. And now Israel and the U.S. have resumed their political efforts to regain control of Lebanon. To discuss the current situation, I'm joined on the phone by photojournalist John Elmore. We've reached John in Tripoli, a city in the north of Lebanon. Hi, John. Good evening to you, your time anyway, and welcome back onto Red Eye.
Oh, it's always my pleasure to be with you, Mordecai.
From all reports at the time, Israel's massive bombing of Lebanon was devastating. I know you've not yet been to the south of Lebanon, but you were in Beirut, and I wonder what you saw there about that devastation.
Well, it is the south that took the brunt of it, but Beirut took a significant hit, and I drove up north, as you mentioned, and driving all the way up north, there's not a bridge intact throughout the country of Lebanon. It was a massive war, and a war that was precipitated apparently by the kidnapping of two Israeli soldiers and the killing of three others in a cross-border raid by Hezbollah. But the gravity of the destruction within Lebanon really shows it to be something completely different. And if you'll allow me a moment to unfold some of the costs of this war, which are often abstractions in the Western media, but being here on the ground in Lebanon, I can tell you it's not an abstraction. You have 1,300 people dead, the overwhelming majority of them civilians, more than 500 children, 5,000 people wounded. According to the United Nations, 15,000 homes destroyed, 900 businesses. As I said, 77 bridges destroyed, 31 utility plants, and this is in a war that lasted for 34 days, so 31 utility plants in 34 days. 975,000 as a minimum number of Lebanese left homeless, and it's worth noting that this is amongst a population of barely over 3.5 million people. The war was a significant one waged by Israel, and one that was openly declared by Israeli military and political leaders to be a war on the country of Lebanon, on the people of Lebanon, in order to destroy what's called a terrorist organization in the West, but a major political party here in Lebanon, Hezbollah. Dan Halutz, the chief of staff of the Israeli army, said that the goal of the war was to set the clock back 20 years in Lebanon. Israel fired, according to their own figures, 237,000 shells. They carried out many thousand air raids, more than $1 billion in ammunition, creating $4 billion in damage throughout the country. And this is a massive toll that's been felt, and it's been felt even after the war. The last day of the war, Israel sent thousands of cluster bombs into Lebanon, leaving, according to the United Nations, more than 1 million cluster bombs throughout the south of Lebanon. The head of the IDF rocket unit called this, this is the Israeli Army rocket unit, called this bombing, the cluster bombing, quote, insane and monstrous. So this is assessments by the Israeli Army themselves. And as I was told in a taxi cab riding with the Shia from the village of Kana, which experienced the massacre of 37 children taking safe haven, it was the Shia of Lebanon, as she said, we're the ones who ate it. The concentration of the attacks were on the Shia population, and despite the rhetoric that we hear that they were targeting Hezbollah rocket-launching sites, one of the most destroyed areas in the country was the southern suburb of Beirut. Without even knowing the geography of Lebanon, I can tell you there was no rockets fired from Beirut into Israel. Yet in that area, Nadahia, the southern suburb of Beirut, there was 5,000 apartment units destroyed, 17,000 partially destroyed, and more than 100 people killed. So these are expressly civilians. And you compare this to the damage to Israel, there was 39 Israeli civilians killed and 115 soldiers. So this was a war carried out against the people of Lebanon, with the express purpose of destroying a popular movement, Hezbollah, a movement that represents about 50% of the population in Lebanon and has support across confessional lines. So this is really the underpinning, as you mentioned. The war was what led to the political situation that we're leading, that we're dealing with now, which is massive popular protests, really, frankly, stunning popular protests, much larger than what the State Department last year called the Cedar Revolution. We're talking people in the streets numbering over a million people in Beirut, a city of, including the refugee camps and suburbs around Beirut, you know, 2 million people. You've got more than half the people in the streets of Beirut right now.
I'd like to get to that, those demonstrations that are happening right now. What is the goal or the demands of these demonstrations? And maybe you could give a little more elaboration as to who is participating and organizing them, because they're presented here just as Hezbollah.
Well, they largely are Hezbollah. We have to be honest about that. And Hezbollah is presented in the West as a ragtag militia of sorts. This is a massive popular movement. As I said, the Shia make up about 50%. Shia Muslims make up about 50% of the population of Lebanon. So you have enormous popular support for Hezbollah. Hezbollah, you know, again, not a ragtag terrorist organization, but in fact a popular movement that has instituted major democratic reforms within Lebanon. In, for instance, as far back as the early 1990s, Hezbollah was lobbied and created the first local municipal elections. In other words, elections electing people that were going to act on the local municipal level, very important level of government, for the first time since 1963. And Hezbollah pushed for these reforms within the government of Lebanon. It's worth noting that the government of Lebanon is expressly in its constitution divided along confessional lines. The prime minister, the president, and the speaker of the house have to come from the various political and religious sects within Lebanon. The demonstrations are largely organized by Hezbollah, which is not to take away in any way from the popular movement, which has, as Hezbollah is always quick, and I've done a number of interviews with Hezbollah officials and party apparatchiks in here in Lebanon, are quick to point out, contains Christians, Sunnis, and Shia, as well as Druze within Hezbollah itself. The demonstrations are in fact quite limited in their goal and quite democratic in their goal. They want to dissolve the government as it stands right now, in order that the Shia population is represented at least one-third within the government. And again, one-third representation for a population that makes up fully 50% of the country. Quite limited goals, and Hassan Nasrallah said in an important speech yesterday that if there were popular elections and Hezbollah gained more than one-third representation, that they would relinquish the representation above one-third. It's important to note that Lebanon fought a brutal and protracted civil war from 1975 to 1990, and in the sectarian divisions within the country are very important, and the respect for those sectarian divisions are upheld in these demonstrations by Hezbollah. They're very limited. They're asking for a devolution of the government in order to reform a government that represents the population within Lebanon. So it's not a coup. In fact, Nasrallah said yesterday that in his speech that if the prime minister, Signora, devolves parliament and holds elections, that these same people that are in the government today can resume their positions in government. So they're not even calling for the removal of the prime minister, a prime minister, it's worth noting, who supported, if not vocally, then de facto supported the Israeli war against Lebanon. The Israeli, the Lebanese army didn't in any way resist the army of Lebanon didn't in any way resist the aggression by Israel. It was simply Hezbollah fighting fighting, and it wasn't the army, it wasn't the government's army in any way protecting the civilians. So in this case, it's actually quite limited the goals of this popular movement.
You mentioned that over a million people assembled in the first day of the demonstrations, but I gather that the demonstrations are considered to be open-ended. Can you say anything about how they have evolved in terms of their support, the mood among the people, the numbers attending, etc.?
Well, look, in the first day, you can take the most conservative estimates. For instance, Time magazine puts the number at 900,000. The police, which are government police and have an interest in not having the demonstrations be large, put the number about the same, 900,000. But being on the streets and people on the streets are saying, of course, they're well over a million in the first days, and they've been consistent throughout. There's a tent city set up right in the downtown core, right in front of the parliament. The Lebanese parliament is encircled by concertina wire, razor wire, and the military is in the streets, tanks and armored personnel carriers throughout Beirut in the streets. The presence, of course, is dwindles during the week while people go back to work and such, but still numbering in the tens, if not hundreds of thousands, maintaining a constant presence. Hassan Nasrallah, it's been going on since the 1st of December, so 8-9 days into it now, and Nasrallah gave a speech on Thursday night, and I was in the crowd, and there's no way there was less than 600,000 or 700,000 people to see that speech. How long they can last, it's hard to know how long the government can hold out. The United States, of course, and Israel has significant interests in having these in having the government remain steadfast in the face of these popular demonstrations in the streets, so it's uncertain how long it can last. The Lebanese, the head of the Lebanese military, says it can't go on forever, and certainly not more than a couple of weeks. The military can't hold out in the face, and realistically, no government can hold out in the face of street protests numbering more than half the population of the largest city in the country. And of course, you have to remember that the people that are in the streets don't represent everybody in their house. Somebody has to remain in the house looking after the children and such. So you have an overwhelming popular movement. And you can see this in the fact that in every taxi cab or every bus that you're in, the demonstrations are being broadcast on the radio and on television live around the clock. Every discussion that you have in a coffee shop is based on these demonstrations. Like I said, every taxi, every bus, you leave the demonstration, you get into a taxi, and the protests are on the radio in the taxi. So the government simply can't hold out in the face of this kind of popular protest for more than another week or so.
Just a last comment, if you can, John. Here, of course, you're familiar that Hezbollah is presented as an agent of the Syrian and Iranian governments. I'm wondering, not so much Hezbollah, of course, sees itself and presents itself as an independent movement, but I'm wondering if you've had conversations with people in the demonstrations, in the taxis, and so forth, as to their attitudes about any foreign involvement outside of their own political parties and organizations in the affairs of Lebanon.
Well, no, but there's no doubt that there's external influences on both sides. What people on the streets say is that there's no surprise that Iran it supports the popular movements within Lebanon. This is their brothers, their Shia, their confessional brothers, if you will. But what people are saying is that Iran places no demands upon Hezbollah. The support is unconditional, if you will, whereas American support is hinged upon direct influence within the government. And so there's natural alliances within the Arab world and Iran just outside the Arab world based on confessional lines that aren't surprising. But the foreign influence that plays the role in this crisis that's happening right now for the government is the Americans and the Israelis. And as you said right from the beginning, this is, politics is war by other means, and that's really what's going on here. And people are framing it in terms of last summer was the external war, and Israel failed, and so they're carrying out an internal war to carry on that war in order to destroy Hezbollah, and that's the goal. And they failed militarily, and now they're attempting politically to hold out in the face of these popular movements, and it's unlikely to succeed. These movements are any popular movements of this size can simply not be beaten back.
Well, thanks a lot, John, for making time in your busy schedule, and we wish you the best in your ongoing writing and photography work in Lebanon, and hopefully a possibility to return to Palestine and do the same.
Thanks a lot, Mordecai. It's always my pleasure.
I've been speaking with John Elmore. He's a photojournalist specializing in the Middle East. He also has co-authored an analysis of Canadian foreign policy with Anthony Fenton, and their book is due to be published in the spring of next year.